Welcome to The Point on WCAI. I'm Steve Junker. It's Friday, November 16th. This is our weekly news roundup when we discuss some of the top local news stories of the week with colleagues in the print and digital media. Joining me in the studio from the Cape Cod Times is Jeff Spillane. Good morning, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
And joining us later will be Bill Evel from the Vineyard Gazette. We'll speak with Tim Wood at the Cape Cod Chronicle, Ed Miller at the Provincetown Banner, and George Brennan from the Martha's Vineyard Times. And now a look at some of the news here around the Cape and the islands. Jeff, let's start this week with a proposed regional middle school for the Dennis Yarmouth School District. There's a vote coming up on this, and it has a large price tag, and it's drawing plenty of scrutiny.
It does, like many schools recently that are being proposed and built here on the Cape. Voters in the Dennis Yarmouth Regional School District will be heading to the polls on December 4th to decide whether or not they want to build a new Dennis Yarmouth Regional Middle School. It comes with a $117 million price tag. But there is a big if attached to this. It appears as if the agreement, the regulatory agreement between the two towns for the regional school district between Dennis and Yarmouth, is a bit on shaky ground right now. So if this does pass, this school, it could be a big hit for Yarmouth taxpayers if the regional district, for some reason or another, dissolves. And some alternatives are being looked at as well here. The selectmen are telling people in Yarmouth, hey, you might want to really think about this mm-hmm. before you approve it. And maybe perhaps we look at some other alternatives, maybe renovating the existing Mattakee School or building our own school, as opposed to diving into this project.
Now, some of the questions about the funding around this go with the proportion that the two towns pay towards this regional school
right
district.
Now, and it has been in the past, where costs have been pretty much split in proportion to how many students each town sent to the school district. And it breaks down right now about 65% Yarmouth, 35% Dennis. And that's become an issue. That's a real point of contention here. The town of Yarmouth is saying, hey, we might want to take a look at this. We might want to change it. You know, there's some common areas that we're thinking about here in the school. There's an auditorium. There's a gymnasium. There's some community facilities here that can be used by both towns. So why don't we split that 50-50? That's not going over well with the folks in Dennis. And that looks like it could be the big issue that decides whether or not this passed or not. So Dennis wants to keep it straight on the foundation enrollment.
Mm-hmm. And then we should say that school price tag, $117 million, but a large portion of that is eligible for some reimbursement from the state.
Right, about 57%, very similar to what we saw last year with the Cape Cod Tech vote. They got a large match from the state as well. So really it would come down to about half the state would reimburse them for. And if this doesn't pass, the project would go down toward the end of the list now, and Yarmouth would pass up that state.
That's
funding.
Right. So if Yarmouth wanted to pursue its own middle school there, it would go to the end of the list of the state's reimbursements for schools that are being proposed.
Yes, exactly. And the Yarmouth Board of Selectmen met on Tuesday night, and 3 out of 5 of the selectmen voted not to support the vote on December 4th unless changes were made to the regional school agreement. Mm.
Barnstable town officials are looking at expanding the town's highway highway business district. What could this mean, and what problems are they trying to address here?
Yeah, well, if you're familiar with Barnstable, there are some main business districts. They call highway business districts. Of course, it's Route 132, where the Cape Cod Mall is, the Cape Town Plaza, Route 28 that goes from Centerville into Hyannis, Bell Tower Mall, that area. It's pretty congested. And then West Main Street in Hyannis, right around the Melody Tent going up toward the high school. There's some sweeping zoning changes in town that are being proposed right now. In these highway business districts, believe it or not, there are only two what they call by right uses for these properties. And they're for banks, specifically banks without drive-thrus, and professional offices, non-medical offices. But you see retail there. You see restaurants. Mm. You see everything else there. So one of the amendments that's being proposed in front of the Barnstable Town Council is, hey, let's add some more uses here so it attracts more business, makes it easier for businesses to come in. They don't have to get a special permit. So the amendment is calling for the addition of 26 different uses to add on top of those two. They range anywhere from bowling alleys to movie theaters to retail to funeral homes.
Mm.
And they're thinking that would fill up some of the vacancies they have there in those business districts and avoid blight and also stop potential businesses from going out of town. Another amendment that's being proposed is quite controversial in that there are expansions of the highway districts being proposed primarily in the Centerville area, going west from the intersection of Old Stage Road and then in Hyannis right by the Melody Tent, which, by the way, is not in the highway district right now, business district, but they would add that and some properties that are going up Scudder Avenue. And a big issue here is you're encroaching on some residential neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to have that happen? And also, there's some concern with some of the new uses that they want to bring into these districts. For instance, contractors' yards, self-storage facilities, and wholesale distribution facilities. You know, is that what we really want on these already congested highways? So there's a lot of questions here. One of the big pluses that could happen here is this rezoning could make affordable housing easier to put in these areas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's right where public transit goes and where the sewer is going to go. So pretty big changes being proposed. Barnesville Town Council met last night in a joint meeting with the planning board. They went till about 11 o'clock, well, about 10:30 or so. And it is going to be continued till December 6th.
We're going to speak right now with Bill Evel at the Vineyard Gazette. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Bill. Bill, you've got an update on the storied Island Cup football game, which is played this Saturday. Tell us about this.
Exactly. It's a lot of fun. It's played this Saturday at 1 p.m. This year it's at Nantucket, and it's really huge for the players and all of the community. This year it pits Don Herman's Vineyarders, who are 2-8, against Joe Perry's Whalers, who are 6-2 and having a really great season. But as everybody says, records go out the window for this game because everybody gets really, really fired up. It also, it's interesting, it promises to be an emotional game. Don Herman is back after a two-year retirement. He was actually coached for a long time and had won 12 Island Cups in a row. He retires. The very next year, the Vineyard gets blown out 42-0. Last year, the Vineyard can't even field a team. So he came out of retirement and coached the team this year, so he's going to be back on the sidelines. Also, this will be the first year that legendary coach Vito Capizzo for Nantucket is not on the sidelines or in the stands. He led the team for 45 years. He retired in 2009, but he died this past May. And I've heard the Vineyard team, they're all wearing his initials on their helmets as tribute, so that's going to be a beautiful moment. The rivalry, it's a ton of fun. It goes back to 1953 when the Vineyard first fielded a team, and it now stands at 36-30-3. So it's been pretty, it goes back and forth mm-hmm. over the decades who's the top team, but it's been really fun to watch, and the whole community is really excited to go out in force to Nantucket.
Now, something is shifting also in that next year the Island Cup won't fall at the end of the season.
Exactly. That's sort of a kind of a wrinkle for this year because we always come at the end of the year. It's just before Thanksgiving. It used to be on Thanksgiving, so everything led to it. As they said, sort of records go out the window. It's almost like a one-game season. But next year, the Vineyard changes leagues, and they will be in the same league as Nantucket. So league rules, they'll have to play before, and it'll actually be, for a league moment, a league win in addition to the Island versus Island win. So that'll be different.
Bill Evel from the Vineyard Gazette. Bill, thanks for bringing us up to speed on the Island Cup.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Take care.
Jeff Spillane from the Cape Cod Times. Jeff, let me ask you about the Army Corps of Engineers. They've announced a series of public information meetings on the question of what to do about the Bourne and Sagamore bridges.
They have, and a lot of people here on the Cape and Islands are probably saying it's about time, Steve. There are 5 meetings scheduled in December. For the Army Corps. They want to hear from Cape Codders and Islanders about their thoughts on either rehabilitating rehabbing or building new bridges. The meetings are going to be held in Bourne at the high school, Plymouth South High School, a meeting on Nantucket at the high school, Martha's Vineyard, and wrapping up on the 12th at Barnstable. The Corps is in the midst right now of doing a multi-year evaluation of the bridges, which are 83 years old, to determine whether or not they should rehab them or replace them. And some of the concerns that are expected to be raised in these meetings are congestion around these old bridges, which really weren't built for this type of traffic, or even the width of vehicles now. Pollution that's caused by idling vehicles because there's so much traffic, especially during the summer. And a big one, evacuation, if something should happen there on the Cape and Islands. So in August, the Mass Department of Transportation did have some recommendations. They're going with a replace strategy. So it'll be interesting to find out what people have to say here. Randy Hunt, the representative from the Sandwich and Bourne area, predicts this will be a $1 billion project, and about $500 million of infrastructure around the bridges will be needed.
I saw he also is hoping that he'll be there to help cut the ribbon.
He said it's one of his life goals is to live long enough to see the new bridges open.
So let me just run down those meeting dates for folks one more time. The Corps holding these public information meetings around this. Tuesday, December 4th, that's at Bourne High School Auditorium. Wednesday, December 5th, at the Plymouth High School. Thursday, December 6th, at Nantucket High School. Tuesday, December 11th, in Martha's Vineyard High School. And December 12th, at Barnstable High School, hosting that meeting there. This is the News Roundup. I'm Steve Junker. With us from the Cape Cod Times, Jeff Spillane. We're going to the break now. When we come back, we'll speak with Tim Wood at the Cape Cod Chronicle. There's more in a moment. And welcome back. This is the News Roundup. On The Point, we're discussing the top local news stories of the week. I'm Steve Junker. Joining me from the Cape Cod Times is Jeff Spillane. And on the phone with us right now from the Cape Cod Chronicle, Tim Wood. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Steve.
Tim, the town of Chatham is looking at some waterfront infrastructure projects moving forward. In Stage Harbor, there are a couple of piers, one owned by the town and the other by the Yacht Club. Tell us about this.
Sure. About 2 years ago, the town purchased the Eldridge Trap Dock on Stage Harbor, which is adjacent to the town's Harbormaster facility just to the east. And the idea there was to rebuild that trap dock, which has been used as a commercial facility for many years, and have it available as an alternative offloading facility for the town's commercial fishermen should access to the fish pier in Stage Harbor, Chatham Harbor, become limited because of the changes over there, which is actually happening right now. But town officials initially worked with the owners of the dock immediately to the west of the trap dock, the Stage Harbor Yacht Club, who were also planning to rebuild that pier. Both piers are in pretty poor shape. The idea was that if they could work together, both parties could save some money. Now, this week we learned that at this point the two have parted ways, and each will pursue the projects their projects independently. The Yacht Club officials said that the town's plan to rebuild the trap dock with a concrete and steel deck was going to be more costly than using wood, which is what they want to pursue, both for aesthetic and obviously price reasons. Town officials say they need to use the more durable, the concrete and steel materials in order to support trucks and other infrastructure that will be needed in conjunction with the commercial offloading use of the trap dock pier. Now, some members of the town stage, Aunt Lydia's Cove Committee, are a little concerned that the trap dock alone won't be large enough to accommodate commercial offloading if enough boats have to switch from Chatham Harbor to Stage Harbor, and they had hoped to be able to use the Yacht Club dock at certain times of the year, specifically in the fall and the winter when the Yacht Club wasn't using it. But that looks like it may not happen. There's still some talk about that, but the committee asked that the town go back and talk some more to the Yacht Club and see if they could maybe come to some kind of agreement. And now the town's looking to put the engineering specs out for their portion of this project as soon as possible. The project is estimated to cost about $1.4 million in the town. Right now has a Seaport Economic Council grant to do the planning and expects more Seaport money to help with the construction. Meanwhile, over on Chatham Harbor, The town is finally getting going on reconstruction of the observation deck at the fish pier. That project has been about 4 years in the planning stages, and the deck has had to be closed to the public a couple times because of structural problems, and right now it's actually limited to no more than 100 people at one time. It's kind of imperative that the town get this observation deck rebuilt, though, because the fish pier has turned into really the number one tourist attraction in town. Mm-hmm. It attracts as many as 4,000 visitors a day during the peak summer. It's where people can watch, not only watch fishing boats offload, but it's become sort of a mecca for seal watchers, too, because the seals hang out where the fishing boats are. The new deck is estimated to cost about $1.2 million. It's going to be a little larger than the current one. It'll have a special outdoor elevator to meet accessibility requirements. And bids for that project are due back on November 28th. Natural Resource Department Director Robert Duncanson said he anticipates presenting the project to finalize the contract to the Board of Selectmen on December 3rd. And he said if the town can get everything in place and construction can begin in January, then it's likely that the project could be completed by about the middle of June, just in time for the busy summer season.
Tim Wood at the Cape Cod Chronicle. Tim, thanks for checking in with us.
Thank you, Steve.
Jeff Spillane from the Cape Cod Times is with me. Jeff, the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe was in D.C. this week, where it organized a rally pushing Congress to act on a bill that would offer the tribe protections.
Yeah, they did, Steve. Hundreds of members of the tribe traveled out to D.C. Wednesday. There was a march from the National Museum of the American Indian to right in front of the Capitol. The tribe members, as well as members of other tribes throughout the country and non-tribal members, gathered there to express their concern with a September ruling by the Department of Interior that pretty much reverses the decision that created the tribe's reservation in 2015. There was a similar walk in Mashpee a couple of weeks ago, which also attracted about 200 people. The ruling that was overturned was one that gave the tribe land in trust for about 351 acres in Taunton and Mashpee. And in 2016, a federal judge said that the Department of the Interior did not have the authority to take the land in trust because the tribe was not under federal jurisdiction when the Indian Reorganization Act passed in 1934. So that was a result of a lawsuit that was filed by neighbors in Taunton who were concerned with the casino. During this rally on Wednesday, Congressman Keating was there. Of course, he is one of the sponsors of what's called the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe Reservation Reaffirmation Act, which he has been proposed for the House as also a companion bill in the Senate. And he said, you know, hey, this is an existential threat, not only for the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe, but about 127 other tribes that could be affected. And also Representative Kennedy spoke as well, Joe Kennedy III, saying that he hopes this gets passed either in this session or the next session of Congress.
And the tribe really seeing this bill as their best chance move forward here and keep their lands in trust. In Centerville, a proposed cell antenna in a church steeple is still being studied. This is a story that dates back to last spring, right?
Yeah, you know, it started in April, where there were about six T-Mobile wireless antenna being installed in the steeple of the old cell congregational church in Centerville. This is something that is not uncommon. I think a lot of church steeples, whether you know it or not, have these antennas inside. It's a way to improve service while hiding them, pretty much. Neighbors in Centerville got wind of this, got very upset, concerned they weren't notified, and also very upset about possible health concerns there in the village. The group that they formed was the Centerville Concerned Citizens. Very active. If you drive through, there's a lot of signs. It was thought that putting these antenna in the steeple was a by right use because you weren't really affecting the outside of the structure in the historic district. But this group actually got an attorney, and it was determined that, you know what, this church is in a Cape Cod Commission district of critical planning and concern, so the building permit was pulled. T-Mobile, in turn, went in front of the Zoning Board of Appeals in Barnesville, said, okay, yep, that's fine. We'll stop work on this, but give us a special permit or a variance. that's where it got a little fuzzy because it wasn't, they weren't sure whether they had the jurisdiction to do that or not. So last week it was decided that the town would go out and hire a consultant at T-Mobile's expense to determine whether or not there was a big gap in coverage for the carrier in the Centerville-Craigville area and whether the church was the best place to put those. If that is the case and they cannot eventually get a special permit from the town, this is likely to end up in federal court. Reason being, the Federal Communications Commission says that, hey, you know, local authorities can only do so much if there's an area where there is a lack of coverage and is underserved. So this isn't going to end anytime soon, if you ask me.
Jeff, I want to ask you about two local anti-Trump groups. They say they've ended or they are ending their protests against Trump because of safety concerns.
They are. And, you know, if I live on the Upper Cape. You do too, Steve, running errands in Falmouth on a Saturday morning. You see these folks are out on the Village Green all the time on Saturday mornings. For the past 15 months or so, they've been protesting President Trump. Their group is called Move to Remove. And there have been offshoots of this group that have been formed in Sandwich and in Dennis to a lesser extent. But the group has decided that they are going to stop having their organized protests on the Falmouth Village Green and also over in Sandwich because it's become too dangerous. There are safety concerns, especially following the recent pipe bombs before the election and the event that happened, the mass shooting at the synagogue in Pittsburgh. So there will not be any more of these organized events on Saturday mornings. The protesters have been insulted. They've been yelled at. Obscene gestures. And more recently, they claim that their detractors become more.
Your favorite.
They've stopped. They've stopped their cars. They've pulled over. They've taken photos. They've got a little more antagonistic. And for the coordinator of the Falmouth event, a gentleman called Paul Rifkin, a lot of people are familiar with, the straw that broke the camel's back for him was somebody actually sent a letter to what was his home. These people who sent the letter thought he was still living there, saying, hey, we put up with, and this was the words, your boy Obama for 8 years, so leave Trump alone. That spooked him and really frightened him, saying, if they've gone to that extent, what's next? So he decided, I don't want to be responsible for anyone getting hurt. And in Sandwich, the same thing, calling President Obama. Rifkin and some others say they're going to continue, but on their own.
Mm-hmm. And that their passion around this issue remains as strong as ever, they say.
It does. But, you know, as he said, we just don't want to be responsible for getting people together on Saturday mornings and something horrible happening.
We're going to speak right now with Ed Miller at the Provincetown Banner. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Steve.
Ed, Truro Town Meeting took on a number of issues that we've spoken about here on the Roundup. There was house size limits and marijuana regulations. Tell us how this all played out.
Well, in both cases, the town meeting on Tuesday night this week approved both the limits on house sizes in the residential district of Truro and approved a set of new regulations for the zoning bylaw to govern marijuana businesses. These were two controversial subjects, as you've mentioned. In fact, the house size question has been bandied about in Truro for several years now. And at the annual town meeting in 2017, the town agreed to limit the size of houses in the National Seashore District, which in Truro, of course, is more than half the town. And at the time, a number of the residents of the seashore complained that it didn't seem fair to place limits just on them and not in the rest of the town, where, in fact, most construction takes place. But an effort at that point to extend the limitations to the whole town failed. But this time, the planning board's proposal to limit the size of houses in the residential non-seashore part of the town did pass. Although there was a lot of disagreement about the specifics of the proposal. Some people thought the limits were too lenient, and some thought they were too strict. I think in the end, the majority decided that having something was better than nothing. And in fact, at a recent select board meeting, one of the selectmen, Maureen Burgess, pointed out that right now there are no limits at all. Mm-hmm. And even though she said, and a couple of her colleagues agreed, that she would rather see tighter limits on structures, she was worried that she said, frankly, we're lucky that things haven't gotten worse at this point. She said many people who wish to buy into vacation destination areas like Truro are very well aware of where they can go, where there are no zoning restrictions on size of houses. And a number of people said that even on a minimum size lot in Truro, which right now is 0.775 acres, you could build a house as big as 15,000 square feet. Now, other people disputed that and said that was absurd. But the concern about the proliferation of large houses clearly won the day. The vote at the special town meeting was 175 to 59, and so it got more than the two-thirds majority required.
And just briefly, yeah, bring us up to speed on the marijuana, too.
Well, again, this is Truro is one of the towns that had voted in favor of marijuana legalization and allowing marijuana businesses. And so the planning board was under a lot of pressure to adopt specific rules, they now have done that. The main objections to the rules the planning board proposed came from a group of farmers, in particular this one group called the High Dune Craft Cooperative, who felt that there were certain restrictions in the proposed bylaws that would really make it hard for them to succeed and profit from growing marijuana in Truro. And their arguments prevailed quite easily at the special town meeting, even though some people expressed worry that Truro would become the marijuana capital of the Cape. Those worries did not seem to hold sway over those who felt that it was more important to support the struggling farmers in Truro.
Ed Miller from the Provincetown Banner. Ed, thanks so much for bringing us up to speed on that.
My pleasure, Steve.
With me is Jeff Spillane from the Cape Cod Times. Jeff, the rest area on Route 6, it's long been a focus of efforts by the county to upgrade it, to make it a little nicer, maybe a little more useful. It's not a process that's happening quickly.
No.
And now outgoing County Commissioner Leo Kukunis, he had a special thing for trying to resolve this issue, and he's going to be leaving office.
He is. He was narrowly defeated last week by Ron Bergstrom, who is from Chatham, was going to be taken over. But yeah, this was a big project for Leo Kukunis. And in fact, he mentioned to us as something he really wanted to finish off in a second term. This is the Route 6 eastbound rest area between exits 6 and 7. If you've been by it, looks pretty ramshackle. It's run down. It's old. And it really is, as we had written about at one point, it's a welcome mat to Cape Cod for a lot of people, about 100,000 visitors per year. This restroom facility is also a visitor center. The goal of the county is to get a long-term lease for this rest area. Right now, it's on a year-to-year license basis from the state. If they get a long-term lease, they can lure a convenience store, perhaps a fast food restaurant to get in there, upgrade the services, upgrade the facilities, and it would kind of pay for itself, maybe give them a little extra money as well. Issue is, though, the property is owned by the state of Massachusetts, which really does not want to be involved in these rest areas anymore. But they can't just give the county a long-term lease because it's on a highway that was built with federal funds. So that brings in the Federal Highway Administration. looked as if last April that there was some really nice movement on this. Our delegation reached out to the federal delegation to say, hey, can you help us here? Senator Warren sent a letter to the Federal Highway Administration, actually got one back fairly quickly, saying, yes, you know, work with our people, our local people in Cambridge, and we agree with this, and we'll get it moving. Well, it's stalled right now. So in order to keep it opened, the county commissioners last week encumbered $40,000 from the Cape and Islands license plate funds to put aside for this, for really just maintenance of the rest area. That includes cleaning the restrooms and trash disposal, you know, just trying to keep it nice, really. And this was going to be actually done by the town of Yarmouth Chamber of Commerce. They do have the visitor center there. So what they will do is they will take care of outsourcing all of the trash disposal, cleaning, et cetera, then bill back for the county against this account. It saves the county a lot of money. In the past, they were doing it themselves. There was a lot of overtime that they were incurring for their employees. So this seems to be the best way to do it, at least right now, to keep it open, at least for next summer.
And long-term, they are looking at continuing to push on this lease to get the long-term lease.
They are. I spoke with Senator Sear about this week, and he said it certainly is something that they continue to push on. He said he didn't expect it to happen at this point, to be ready for next summer, but hopefully for the summer of 2020.
This is the News Roundup. I'm Steve Junker, with us from the Cape Cod Times, Jeff Spillane. We're going to the break now. When we come back, we'll hear from George Brennan at the Martha's Vineyard Times. There's more in a moment. Welcome back. This is the News Roundup on The Point. We're discussing the top local news stories of the week. I'm Steve Junker. Joining me from the Cape Cod Times is Jeff Spillane. And on the phone with us right now from the Martha's Vineyard Times is George Brennan. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Steve, and good morning, Jeff.
Hey, good morning, George.
George, an Oak Bluffs police officer has been terminated from his position. This is a story with some wrinkles to it, and the Times has been pushing on this.
Yeah, so this officer is Detective James Morse, and last Friday there was a selectman's meeting where they agreed to a separation agreement with Detective Morse, and they didn't say much at that time what was going on. We had caught wind of this about a week earlier and had requested the internal investigation, and were told that there was no such document available at that point. It turns out that on Monday, actually it was Tuesday because Monday was a holiday, the police chief issued a statement telling us that Detective Morse had been let go because he had used the FBI's criminal background check, conducting background checks on people who weren't under criminal investigation by the department. This all stems from a mysterious separate agency doing some investigation. They reached out to Oak Bluffs Police and said, one of your officers may be conducting these background checks. That prompted an audit and did turn out that he had been conducting these investigations unauthorized. So he's been let go. He is being compensated, of course, for any accumulated vacation time and some comp time. But interestingly, he is also being allowed to seek his county retirement. So that is already getting some pushback from some of our commenters online saying, how can someone who has to, leave their job be entitled to their retirement benefits? So, and we are continuing to pursue, by the way, the internal affairs report could be released as soon as today.
George, it's been a tough week and a half for the Dukes County Courthouse, the folks who work there, and for folks with business at the court. Tell us what's happening there.
Yeah, it's tough to know if it's open or closed. There was an issue with a boiler. It's obviously an older building, 1858. And so the boiler had a problem, and there was an asbestos pipe, apparently, that was discovered as they were looking to fix that that furnace. And that shut things down because of the fear of asbestos. And then the company couldn't get to the island, and there were other issues. It did finally get removed. The pipe got removed, but the furnace didn't get fixed on the holiday. On Tuesday, you know, things were business as usual. But on Wednesday, as everybody knows, it got really cold.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was pretty cold inside the building. And some departments started to close. Others tried to stay open. And ultimately, the courts decided, look, we're just going to close for the remainder of the week, because the forecast was for colder weather.
Your article describes people there at work in their coats and hats.
Yeah, they were. And, you know, we actually had sought to photograph some of them, and they were like, no, we don't want no photographs, please. But yeah, and they were working in conditions that they're not used to. For example, the clerk magistrate usually holds, you know, the hearings, clerk magistrate hearings, in a separate room, but instead she was in the courtroom, which was a little bit warmer because there's some electric heat in that particular space. So yeah, it's some real problems to be sure with the county courthouse and you know, this issue with the heating system.
But that's moving forward. They're addressing it now.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be business as usual on Monday. But of course, we'll be checking that out and we'll update our readers.
George Brennan from the Martha's Vineyard Times. George, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Steve. Have a good weekend.
Yep. Jeff Spillane here from the Cape Cod Times. Jeff, the folks behind a plan for a performing arts center in Hyannis met with some local and community representatives, and there are still a lot of questions around this.
There are, Steve. This is something that we started reporting on a little over 2 years ago. It's a facility called the Oceanside Performing Arts Center that's being proposed for Hyannis on a 40-acre parcel that's currently the home of the Twin Brooks Golf Course. This would be the home of the Cape Cod Symphony. It would have about a 1,200 to 1,400-seat concert hall and also a facility for outdoor concerts. On Saturday, the Greater Hyannis Civic Association hosted a meeting for neighbors and abutters to talk and hear a little bit more about these plans. Obviously, a lot of people are concerned about this facility going into the village and quality of life in the area. And some of the concerns that were brought up Saturday, a big one that's been something talked about in Hyannis a lot lately, is nonprofit organizations paying taxes. In Hyannis, they have the hospital, they have the ferry terminal, the airport, dozens of social service agencies. A lot of properties not paying taxes. So they're worried that this could be added on to the role of properties not paying taxes. The person in charge of this organization, Jerry Carter, said, hey, we're willing to enter a pilot payment in lieu of taxes agreement. There's also concerns about parking, traffic studies happening. The state legislature in the last session did give the town of Barnstable $200,000 on behalf of the Oceanside Performing Arts Center to get the ball rolling with design and planning studies for this facilities. Some benefits that they talked about as well, this could be an arts education facility for the community and also offer some year-round employment.
And the anchor here is really this concert hall for the symphony.
It is, right. This would be the permanent home of the Cape Cod Symphony, which now operates out of the Barnstable High School Performing Arts Center.
I gather there's also some concern in the area from the Cape Cod Melody Tent, which is right there.
Yeah, and it's interesting. When I first covered this in September 2016, I spoke with some of the folks with Oceanside, and I said, hey, but you're right across from the Melody Tent. And they said, oh, yeah, well, yeah, that's fine. We have a great working relationship. And I remember calling them that afternoon, the Melody Tent, and they're saying, we have no idea what you're talking about. And it appears that's still the case, because the executive director of the Melody Tent at Saturday's meeting expressed upset that they've been left out of the discussion. And his quote was, I don't understand how you can claim you're being so comprehensive about this, but you haven't brought up that you have a neighbor across the street that's doing the same thing.
Hmm.
So that's going to be interesting to watch how that plays out.
And again, nothing has been filed on this.
Nothing.
It's still very early in the planning stage.
Yeah, the purchase and sale, I guess, that agreement has been entered into.
Hmm. Cape Cod National Seashore hosted a forum in Orleans on dealing with sharks. Another forum dealing with sharks. It drew quite a crowd.
It did. This was Wednesday night at the Nauset Middle School, Nauset Regional Middle School in Orleans. And this was a forum for the Cape Cod National Seashore beaches, primarily to talk about sharks and seal populations there and how they're affecting public safety. Obviously, this has been a big issue lately. September 15th, we had the fatal attack in Wellfleet. And then earlier in the season in August, there was an attack, left a man severely injured that happened in Truro. So some of the issues that were brought up were, hey, you know, we got some communications problem there. We're probably not going to get better cell phone coverage. That's unlikely to be resolved. But, you know, let's put in some call boxes with satellite technology and fiber optic cables. They also, some of the things that they discussed there, we have a regular shark working group going on. Let's try to find some vendors to provide affordable trauma kits to the public, which I thought was kind of interesting, not what you expected a day at the beach.
But they should have some trauma kits out there, and that would mean things that, you know, like tourniquets.
Right. To have
medical gloves.
Stop the bleeding. Gloves.
Yeah.
And there was a researcher from Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution there. Obviously, a lot of people have said, hey, why don't we just call the seal population? She said, yeah, that would be pretty ineffective, because even if you did go there, which you can't right now with the Marine Mammal Protection Act, there's hundreds of thousands of seals from Canada that would like to move down here if that were the case. So that's not likely to happen, nor is any issues to kill sharks here as well. So it looks like technology, maybe drones, sonar buoys, that might be the near-term way to address this.
And Greg Skomal, the marine fishery shark researcher, was there, and he said that as many as 1,000 great whites may have visited the region now in the past 5 years.
That's right.
So they're really kind of getting a sense of what the population here, the shark population, is. And it's maybe much bigger than people have expected. And they're noticing more small sharks in the Cape waters. And they think that that's an indication, too, that sharks are growing up here and that there are only going to be more of them going forward. Let's talk about a new international whale watch handbook, which points to a couple of local companies kind of calling them out for their good practices around whales.
Yeah, the local whale watching industry gets some high marks in this handbook for combining business with conservation. And I had to write down the organization that put out this whale watching handbook. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
It's the International Whaling Commission and the Convention on the Conservation of Migratory Species of Wild Animals.
Mm-hmm.
They put the handbook out. I also didn't know this, but whale watching is about a $2 billion worldwide business. And businesses here on the East Coast, primarily here on the Cape, have got some really high marks. They have a program called Whale Sense, which is an educational program to let people know who are on these cruises how to minimize the risk for marine mammals and how to promote their conservation. There usually are biologists on board. And the Chamber of Commerce director here, Wendy Northcross, said that actually whale watching is one of the most popular views on the Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce's website.
By a big margin. Yeah,
by
I
a
was
big
really
margin.
Impressed.
Over 8,000 views this past summer.
That's people clicking to the website looking to get information about whale watching.
That's right. And also, in addition to enjoyment for tourists and others that take these excursions, there's also it also helps out with research. With the biologists on board, they collect data on where the whales are, what they're seeing. You know, it's not a replacement for dedicated research, but there's another purpose while they're out there to provide data to scientists as to what's happening
and
out there.
The Center for Coastal Studies has this handbook. It's called the Humpback Whale Catalog. They try to document all these whales, and the article says that 25% of the photographs in that catalog come from whale watches.
Right.
So these whale watches really are serving a purpose, as you're saying. I was interested to learn about when the whole whale watching industry really started up on the Cape in 1975,
hadn't
learned that. So it's been here for a while.
It has, and actually, the Center for Coastal Studies in Provincetown was somewhat born out of that.
Stormy Mayo was one of the early. He was on the early whale watches as a biologist.
Stormy.
Yes. Jeff, the grand opening of the Barnstable Dog Park has happened. I put this on our story list specifically for you because I know you're a dog person and you spent some time at dog parks.
I am. I do. I work with the group, the Friends of the Mashpee Dog Park. But after 7 long years of planning and fundraising, the Barnstable Dog Park is officially open. They had their grand opening on Saturday. For those of you unfamiliar where it is, it's off of Finney's Lane near Hathaway's Pond, almost right by the Cape Cod Beer Brewery. And it is, like other dog parks here on the Cape, a public-private partnership, whereas the town does help out with it, but there is a Friends organization that does raise funds to keep the park maintained by the bags that are needed, the stone, and any type of additions that would be needed. And like some other parks here on the Cape, Barnstable was the recipient of a Stanton Foundation grant of about $225,000. That's an organization based in Boston that actually gives a lot of grants for canine recreation and welfare.
I want to ask, before we round up before we finish off here, the Provincetown Theater has come under some criticism for a fundraising campaign that it's running. Tell us about this.
Yeah, the Provincetown Players, which is an influential group in Provincetown in 1915 and 1916, Eugene O'Neill, Susan Glaspell, some other playwrights there. What's called the most important innovative moment in American theater. They're being used, apparently, in some fundraising materials for the Provincetown Theater, which is a real newcomer from 2004. And the heirs to these folks are saying no. They're very upset, saying, you didn't get any permission to use their likeness, their names, and could you please stop?
And they have been referencing the early playhouse that was there. And
on a wharf.
On the wharf and the Provincetown Players and trying to use this sort of to raise money for the current theater. And again, as you say, these folks have kind of chimed in and said, you know, you need to have permission to use us and our likenesses, or the heirs of these folks have chimed in to say that.
Exactly.
And the Provincetown Theater is saying now that they are going to be revisiting these materials.
They are. They're going to take a look at it. They didn't say that they're actually going to stop it, but they say, hey, we'll work with you to see maybe if we can get some permission.
Jeff, I want to ask you a little bit about the election last week, because we didn't get a chance to check in. You are the political reporter there. Your beat really covers the county and the politics, local politics. What was your take on everything that happened last week?
Big turnout, not a lot of change.
Not a lot
here
of
on the
change,
Cape. The only real one change that we saw was on the county commissioner, board of county commissioners, and that was Chairman Leo Kukunis being narrowly defeated by Ron Bergson, who we talked earlier.
And was as somebody who had been following that race closely, was that something that surprised you, or did you see that kind of as it could go either way?
Well, I think that if anyone on Cape Cod was affected by the higher turnout of the Democratic vote, it was Leo. He really lost in Provincetown in the early morning hours. He was ahead up until the votes were counted in Provincetown and Wellfleet. He lost by 300 votes.
That is our news roundup for the week. I want to thank my guest, Jeff Spillane from the Cape Cod Times. Jeff, thanks for being here. I also want to thank our contributors. We heard from Bill Evel at the Vineyard Gazette. We spoke with Tim Wood at the Cape Cod Chronicle. We checked in with Ed Miller at the Provincetown Banner. And we spoke with George Brennan at the Martha's Vineyard Times. I'm shuffling through my papers here. I'm Steve Junker. Thank you for listening.